In place of the program originally scheduled, the National Broadcasting Company brings you a special report from Helsinki, Finland. We'll hear from Edmund Stevens, NBC representative now in the Finnish capital. So now, we take you to Helsinki.
Hello, NBC. This is Edmund Stevens, correspondent of the Christian Science Monitor in Helsinki, Finland. At this very moment, as I speak to you, the vanguard of the Russian invaders on the Karelian Isthmus in the western sector have blasted their way through the main line of defenses of the Mannerheim Line and are within 6 miles of Viipuri. Following up their initial success at Suma last week, they have widened the breach, and taking advantage of the level open ground in this section, they have used their tanks against the remainder of the Finnish defenses. In 10 days, they have advanced 10 miles. In 2 days, they have advanced 10 miles. A lateral thrust to the Gulf of Finland at the same time has brought them to the coast. However, to reach Viipuri, they will have to fight every inch of the way, and there may still be a few surprises between them and their goal. The last civil inhabitants of Viipuri, which was Finland's third largest city with a population of 80,000, left 2 days ago when it became apparent that their city, then near the front, was rapidly becoming part of the front itself. The final act of most of the refugees was to apply the torch to their own homes. Nothing but empty desolation must remain to greet the invader. Only a few weeks ago, Viipuri, still one of the finest towns in Finland, or in Northern Europe, for that matter, had a modern business center, lovely medieval churches, and a splendid old 13th century Swedish castle, whose ramparts had withstood the wars of 6 centuries. Then the Russians began the process of destruction from the air and with their baby Bertha. The inhabitants of Viipuri, inspired by the intense, almost religious patriotism of all Finns in these tragic times, would sooner destroy their beloved city than leave it to be desecrated. This will be the fate of all Finland, indeed, should the Russians succeed by sheer numbers in overrunning it. This is a war not of conquest, but of extermination. Yesterday, in their advance to the coast, the Russians occupied Johannes, where the second largest pulp and cellulose factory in Finland was located. I visited the place in the first month of the war, when the factory was still working. 3 days ago, the plant was destroyed. There wasn't time to remove the machinery, and everything, buildings and equipment, were dynamited out of existence. The occupation of Johannes and of the adjacent island of Hunolan completely cut all land communications between Viipuri and Koivisto, which is apparently still in Finnish hands. Ever since the war started, the powerful coastal defense batteries at Koivisto have proved a terrific thorn in the side of the Russian attackers. Before the Gulf of Finland froze over, the Koivisto guns sank 2 Soviet cruisers and severely damaged a Russian battleship. Later, when the Russians tried to outflank the Mannerheim Line by crossing the ice, the Koivisto batteries destroyed thousands of men and tanks. All efforts to put these batteries out of action from the air failed. For some time now, the garrison of Koivisto has received supplies and ammunition by truck over the ice. Recently, I met one of the drivers engaged in this hazardous business. He was an Italian from Trieste named Stefanovich, who had settled in Viipuri over a decade ago. He told me of his wild rides across the frozen surface of the bay at night with his lights out. Whatever happened, he could not slow down, but had to keep going at top speed. Otherwise, the truck, heavy with its load of shells, would have cracked through the ice. In their efforts to put the batteries out of commission, the Russians continually tried to land parachute jumpers on Koivisto. Once, Stefanovich saw 2 of these Russians come down on the shore. Before he could get close enough to do anything, they killed 2 Finnish sentries and were proceeding to strip off their uniforms to disguise themselves. Stefanovich got within range and settled both of them with his submachine gun. The fall of Koivisto may now be a question of days, even of hours, but it has written an important page in Finland's fight. The Russian break through the Mannerheim line was due solely to their overwhelming numerical superiority. The Russians had 250,000 troops to the Finns 50,000, and were bringing up fresh divisions all the time. The recent advance was made in particular by three new divisions brought up day before yesterday. The Finns, meanwhile, had only the same tired troops with which to resist the invaders, and their ranks were constantly depleted far more rapidly than they could be replenished. They were therefore limited to purely defensive action and could never counterattack. The eastern sector of the Mannerheim line still holds fast, but the capture of Viipuri would place it in serious danger of being outflanked. However, the Finnish general staff has long realized that Viipuri might be lost eventually and has doubtless already provided other positions further back. Once the Russians advance beyond the narrow Karelian isthmus, the front will spread out fan-like in three directions, and there are plenty of lakes and swamps and forests to hamper their progress. Under those conditions, the position warfare, where numbers gave the Russians their advantage, may well develop into guerrilla warfare, in which the Finns have scored such brilliant victories on other fronts. The present military situation may be summed up as follows. While sacrificing tens of thousands of men, the Soviet generals have broken through the western part of the Finnish fortified area. They have thereby achieved the military success which they were striving for by February 23rd, the 22nd anniversary of the Red Army's founding. However, the thought of the enormous price paid, nearly 80,000 dead, and of the obstacles still ahead, must turn to vinegar the wine of victory. There is indeed a possibility, albeit slight, that the Soviet rulers, having put a patch on their military reputation, tired of useless bloodshed, may sue for peace. In the past week, the Russian Air Force took advantage of the clear weather and lengthening days to plaster practically every town in Finland. Last Tuesday, for example, there were 1,080 Soviet planes over Finland at one time. They concentrated on the railway junctions, but as usual, the civil population got the worst punishment. I drove into Lappeenranta, for example, a small town some 25 miles northwest of Viipuri, early one morning, exactly 20 minutes after a steady bombardment that had lasted many hours. Entire blocks of wooden houses were still blazing, and the streets were blocked with debris. Women and children stood watching the flames. On the sidewalks were furniture, mattresses, and household sundries salvaged from the fire. I saw one middle-aged lady open the drawer of her dressing table and fumble for a handkerchief, just as she had doubtless done for years in the privacy of her own home, only now the dressing table was out on the sidewalk and her home destroyed. It was interesting to observe the reactions of various humans and animals to the situation. Only a few of the women gave visible signs of emotion and bewilderment. The children were not like all children at a fire, excited. For the moment, the fact that it was their own home that was burning made no difference to them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevens. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard a special news report by Edmund Stevens, NBC representative now in Finland. Mr. Stevens spoke from Helsinki and was heard in the United States via RCA Communications. This is the National Broadcasting Company.